from the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor a harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
DuckSouth.com. I'm your host, J. Paul Jackson, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Rocky LaFleur, and our special guest from Duck South this week, Jeff Estes. Now, some of you guys probably know Jeff better by his Duck South handle, Greenhead22, and Jeff, I think you've been called quite a few other things along the way, but man, no matter what we call you, we're glad to have you here this week on the podcast with
us. Yes, sir. Glad to be with y'all.
This should get real interesting real fast.
Love it.
You know, it's just three of us on here today, Rocky, me and you and Jeff, and we don't have Josh or Houston to be our filters. I'm really, really scared and kind of excited about what today's going to bring to us.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about.
All right, well, every week you come to us with something. So, Rocky, I'm going to tell you today, happy National Underwear Day.
Is it really?
That's what I was told.
Wow.
I have not seen that on Facebook or the Twitter yet, so that's a new one for me.
I was just too late talking about it at the convenience store at the junction that I just stopped at. So there you go.
You never wear underwear anyway, right?
Hey, buddy, commando is the only way to go.
Commando.
I can't roll that way. I got to have something there.
All right. Hey, let me ask y'all guys something. Hey, both of y'all like sports. I know because when we talk all the time, that's one of the things we talk about. But look, hey, the world's going crazy over this Colin Kaepernick thing. Have both of you guys seen what's happening with that, with him not standing during the national anthem?
Yeah. And honestly, as a 49ers, lifelong 49ers fan, I am utterly ashamed of what's taking place. I mean, there's a lot better ways to go about expressing yourself with what's going on. But, I mean, disrespecting the national anthem and the flag is not the way to do it. I mean, he definitely not personally oppressed. I mean, making $120 million a year. He was adopted by a white family. I mean, he was put in a great educational system to further him, to put him in the place he is now. If they hadn't adopted him, would he be doing what he's doing? I don't know. It's a very solid question. But, I mean, there's a further background into it. Supposedly he has dated a woman or has married a woman that has, she's a Muslim. And I read something earlier that he's actually converted to Islam, like, within the past month or two. But regardless, you still have other guys that are of Muslim religion that stand during the pledge. I mean, that's just something very disrespectful, especially to the men and women overseas that are black and white, whatever, that try to protect our country and give him the option, give him the ability to throw a football around and make $120 million. I mean, it's baffling me right now. And like I said, as a 49ers fan, if they cut him tomorrow, it would not hurt my feelings, not one bit. And I'll turn it over.
No, I agree with you 110%, Jeff. I mean, it doesn't just make me mad. It flat out pisses me off. I mean, here this guy is making $120 million a year. And, we talked last week about Dixie and before that about the Confederate flag. And, look, I can understand the Confederate flag part. You know, hey, I can understand Dixie a little bit, but not so much. I mean, that's just more about my Southern heritage. But the Star-Spangled Banner, oh, hell no. There is no way. You know, this is the land of the free and the brave. And for him to dishonor and disrespect the flag like that and our country, hey, he can get out as far as I'm concerned. Go to Canada and play football. You know, go to the Middle East if your wife's a Muslim and that's where she's from. If you don't like it here, you have the chance to get the hell out. And I will be glad to see you go. Last night I watched Tommy, she spells her name T-O-M-I, I think her last name is Lawner, just go off for 3 minutes. And all I could do was clap and go, you go, girl. I mean, she said it the best of anyone that I've seen. This beautiful little blonde-haired gal in her commentary totally trashed Colin Kaepernick and pointed out all the things that you just did, Jeff. And by the time she was done, you know, not only was I screaming, go, Tommy, but, you know, I was ready to buy the poor devil because he obviously can't afford one himself a plane ticket to go wherever the hell he wants to go to get the heck out of our country.
Yeah, I mean, that's like today and another topic. I saw it earlier that the Mississippi State University is removing the Confederate flag, the state flag, which, I mean, there's going to be a lot of opposition to that. But to me, I can understand that. It's the stuff that is happening at Ole Miss there's no comparison to the Mississippi State stuff like that started today. Ole Miss is completely getting torn apart, and that university, as much as I despise that place, and I have some other choice words that I'm not going to use on the radio, but they're going that school and everything. They're going through a lot of stuff that they shouldn't have to over people getting offended, and that's the main problem with today. People are easily offended. Okay, Kaepernick comes out and does this. And then the Los Angeles Rams a while back had the hands up, don't shoot deal, and they just allow it. Tim Tebow kneels down on the field and prays, and people blow up.
And then
the Dallas Cowboys want to have a sticker on their helmet to remember the slain officers and from Dallas. And the NFL said, no, you can't do that, but you can do this other. It's a double standard, and that's what's wrong with the nation today. That's why we're butting heads.
Brother. I totally agree with you. I mean, to compare the two, Tim Tebow gets crucified for kneeling and praying to his Savior before the game. The Dallas Cowboys cannot honor those slain officers, but the Los Angeles Rams can basically stick a finger at us, and Colin Kaepernick can basically give the finger not only to our flag, but to all the people that have died to give him the freedom to do so. You talk about a screwed up double standard. You nailed it right there.
Well, there's a linebacker from the Philadelphia Eagles. I can't remember his name, but he came out late yesterday and said that he agreed with Kaepernick. Now, former Cleveland Brown great and one of the few Cleveland Brown greats ever, Jim Brown, took up for Kaepernick. But Jim came up in a time where there was a lot of racial stuff. There was segregation. So I can understand Jim coming out and saying some stuff, but Kaepernick, no grounds. Like, there's no way. I mean, it's not even the same thing. I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, you got a bunch of prima donnas making $120 million a year. I know some guys that would take the league minimum in the NFL just to say they were in the NFL, and you got this guy making $120 million. and just gonna sit down. I mean, it's just.
Let me throw in my two cents. Rocky LaFleur has never gone to jail before. Okay, let's get that out there.
And I haven't either. I've never been read my Miranda rights. Knock on wood.
I've never been to jail, but I fear one of these days I am, and here's the reason why. At Ole Miss football games, there's one thing that I've been doing since my dad was alive.
See, that's the first issue with Ole Miss football games.
Well, look, my dad was in Vietnam, so, you know, when you have a parent or grandparent or anybody close to you that has fought for this country, the flag becomes something different to you. And anyway, nothing used to irritate my dad worse than people that wouldn't stop or pull their hat off or put their hand on their heart, you know, when the national anthem's being played. And here's to the point. When the national anthem's being played at Ole Miss, I have an aisle seat, so I stand out in the aisle. Well, last year, I had a, how do I describe this lady? A outspoken lady that I thought she was going to just roll through me. I said, ma'am, I said, no disrespect to you, but when that song's being played, we're gonna stand at attention. And, well, you don't have to tell me what to do. I said, well, you can make your way down another aisle because this one's blocked right now.
So, good for you.
Yeah, it's a disgraceful thing that's going on. Very, very disgraceful deal with
It's more about disgrace than trying to stand up for something you believe in. And I saw this yesterday outside, and I had forgot it. Against the Chicago Bears last year, he was fined $11,000 for cussing a guy out, a linebacker. I mean, he dropped the F-bomb and said the other word and got fined $11,000 for it. And it was a complete outrage from him. I mean, he blew up over it. Well, now, all of a sudden, he wants to stand up and take it's. No, it doesn't work that way.
You know, and here's the thing, too. I know that, you know, we're powered by DuckSouth.com, and we're supposedly a Water Fowling podcast, although we have an idiot on it today. But I think this is very relevant for our podcast because, you know, I think most of the guys out there and ladies listening are waterfowlers. And what really scares me is that I would feel like if we took a poll on DuckSouth.com, we would find that 99.99% of our members totally agree with the way you feel, Jeff, and the way I feel, and the way that Rocky feels. But what is scary is in this world, we are becoming such a minority. I mean, you know, a few days ago, it was the Confederate flag and then Dixie, and now we've got, you know, an NFL quarterback, Super Bowl veteran who is basically thumbing his nose at the flag and at the Stars and Stripes and at the people that have given him the freedom to do that. And it makes me really fear where the heritage and all those things that as hunters, as waterfowlers, we hold dear, you know, what our future is, you know. And I think it's time that we all stood up and kind of took a stand and said, hey, you know what? I hope there's a huge backlash and a huge outcry, just like Tommy last night. I love seeing people. We can't be scared to speak our mind and give our opinion because these losers sure as heck are going to give theirs. So, you know, I hope that everybody will take a stand in some way. I'd love to see the 49ers organization so inundated with hate mail to respond to that, you know, it would consume them.
I don't think you'll see Kaepernick sticking around the 49ers much longer. But on to a happier topic. Hey, I got a question for you guys. Both of you guys dove hunt, and both of you have fields that you dove hunt. Let me ask you something. How many times will you guys dove hunt over the course of the three different seasons, the three different dove seasons? Jay Paul, let me. I don't know if you guys in Tennessee have three different like
they're it's very similar. Very, very similar.
Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
Usually I will hunt roughly 2 weekends out of the, and then I'll hunt some during the week if I'm off. Like I won't be back at work till next Tuesday because of Labor Day, but I'll hunt Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday morning, and head back. Usually the first split, I'll hunt 8 to 10 days if I'm at home. And then like 1 weekend in October, if I find a field that's still got some birds on it, I will. But for most of your people that dove hunt, they hunt Saturday and Sunday and then they're done. Like it, and then the ones that complain about how the season's set up and they change the dates and this and that, they don't hunt past the first weekend.
Most of the guys that I know here in Tennessee aren't like me. Now, personally, oh man, I mean, I'm not in the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi right now because I'm out driving around looking for doves. And I will hunt generally opening day, which for us is September the 1st by law at noon here in Tennessee. But then I will continue. I'll hunt that weekend, and I may hunt a few more times. And then if we have blue-winged teal during the teal season, I'll teal hunt in the morning and a lot of times dove hunt in the afternoon. And, you know, I would say I will probably dove hunt between 10 and 15 times a year in Tennessee and Mississippi. But I agree with you, Jeff. I think that most dove hunters go opening day and opening weekend, and that's it.
I usually hunt that Saturday, that Monday, and if I don't have anything going on that next weekend, I'll hunt. But my main dove season comes in October. I am a October dove season nut. There's nothing better to me than to be sitting on a bucket with a radio, listening to football in a cool 60-degree, 10-mile-per-hour north wind blowing in migratory doves. I mean, it is just unbelievable. And it was just something started by my dad, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. But it brings me back to the point. Can you guys remember the anticipation that Friday night when you were a kid? Can you think both
you
all
sleep.
Of us are – yeah, man.
You couldn't sleep. You could not sleep. And still, some every once in a while, I mean, I'm 36 now. I mean, I've gotten a lot better about it. But even – opening night of duck season, you might as well just stay up because, I mean, you're not going to go to sleep. There's going to be so much, and everybody gets up an hour or 2 hours before. There's just so much anticipation, and it's the same with the dove season because everybody knows college football's coming. It's
That's
on the
right.
same day. And, I mean,
I'll take it a step further than that. My oldest daughter celebrated her 22nd birthday yesterday, August 29th. My wife's due date was September the 2nd with her. And sometime along the way in her second or third trimester at one of her wellness appointments with our OBGYN, I explained to him that September the 1st was opening day of dove season and that I really, really wanted to see my baby being born. And didn't want to be in a dove field. And so my baby was born on August the 29th because we induced labor and my wife cooperated because she loves to go dove hunting with me and understood. And so we actually induced labor with our first child to make sure that I didn't miss opening day of dove season.
Man, I can remember. Look, I would wake up 4 or 5 different times in the night before dove season opened up. That night, I would wake up and look at the clock. I can just remember that and go back to sleep for a little bit longer and then wake up again. It was the opening of hunting season. Dove season opens it all. I mean, it's the greatest day ever. And college football was starting.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple of dove hunts. It was in 94. I was 14. Dad just bought me a new Yamaha Timberwolf. That was the first one they'd come out with, and I was late getting to the field, and I had it hammered down, and I turned the curve, and I flipped it. And I shook it off.
Make your daddy proud of that.
Well, he didn't know. And I don't have to worry about him listening to the podcast, so he won't ever know. But the second time I messed up, I was 16, and I took his brand-new truck down to camp, and I stuck it in the blue hole. And Rocky knows what the blue hole is. And it was a two-wheel drive. It was not pretty. Yeah, I think I spent about 3 hours washing that truck, and I don't think I got in it for another 3 months. Over a dove.
First half of this podcast has been brought to you by Hardcore Decoys and Hardcore Brands, makers of the most innovative and functional products for duck hunters that there are on the market. It's not easy being hardcore.
I've got a dog training question for you this week, Jay Paul, from a Duck South user.
All right, let's hear it.
All right. The Duck South user sent in a question that said, when should you start collar conditioning a dog? At what age?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, it's not one that I can just give some kind of stock answer to, because it depends a whole lot on the dog and the temperament. You know, definitely the dog ought to be the youngest that I would ever condition, collar condition a puppy would be about 4 months old, you know, five. And generally, 6 months old after they get their permanent teeth, about the same time that they're ready for force fetch. But here's what it depends on, Rocky. It depends on two different factors. Number one, that dog's temperament, whether the dog's soft, hard charger, you know, how it takes corrections. And then number two, it depends on that dog's level of maturity, because a dog needs to be fairly mature to be collar conditioned and understand those corrections. And, you know, we see dogs that are just like kids. I mean, some mature really, really early. You know, others are what I would call late bloomers. You know, every now and then we'll have a dog, and I recently did have one in the kennel, 3-month-old yellow Labrador Retriever, was tougher than a steel anvil and, you know, super mature. I mean, the dog was very, very smart, showed a great deal of, you know, a word we use sometimes in retriever training, sagacity, which is usually reserved for a much older dog. But this dog at 3 months, he was pretty sharp cookie, and he was tough as he could be. And we went on and collar conditioned him, you know, and had great results. But you need to take a look at a dog that's really, really soft or a dog that's really, really immature. You want to hold off until that dog's 5 or 6 months old. And also, another big-time caveat when it comes to collar conditioning is take your time and do it right. You can't teach anything with an e-collar. What you can do with an e-collar is reinforce and improve that dog's responses. So, you know, the key is, teach the dog sit, stay, heel, hear, all of those elements before you go in to collar conditioning, and then use what the dog has been taught to collar condition that dog once they're mature enough. And by the way, I love the questions that we get from our Duck South listeners, and really encourage you, please, you know, if you've got something that you'd like to ask about dog training wise, don't hesitate to reach out to us there on the website, because I always enjoy answering these questions.
This portion of the broadcast is brought to you by trainingwithjpaul.com. If you have any questions when you're training your next retriever, go to trainingwithjpaul.com. J-Paul has tons of videos, written content, and he also has a section called AskJPaul.com. It's a useful resource. Ask him a question there. He'll probably answer it through a video and send it back to you. Jay Paul's always really helpful in answering all these questions. We appreciate that. So try it out, trainingwithjpaul.com. All right, guys, on to our final question of the day, and it's a good one. And I didn't tell either one of you what it was beforehand. So, guys, I'm giving you a ticket to anywhere in the world to go duck hunting. What is your bucket list hunt for waterfowl?
Mine would probably be a toss-up between Mexico and Argentina. I would probably lean more towards Mexico because I've never shot a cinnamon teal, and that's just one bird that before I die, I'm gonna shoot some cinnamon teal, and Mexico is your best option for that. So, and I could drive to Mexico because I'm not getting an airplane. So I think Argentina's out of the books on that one. But yeah, I'd probably say Mexico. I mean, you probably shoot 8 to 10 to 12 species of ducks in a day. But for sure, cinnamon teal is my bucket list bird.
You know, Jay Paul, most people think that you've been everywhere and tried everything from being on TV for so long now. But I know from just talking about this with you, there's places that you've never been before. So I'm giving you that free ticket. Where are you going?
Oh, man. You know, that is such a tough question because, you know, like you said, there are places I've never been. A lot of people don't know this, but Pakistan has unbelievable mallard hunting. And, you know, also the Tigris and Euphrates rivers where the, you know, birthplace of humanity is an area rich in mallards that I've never been to. And that would be a really interesting place. You know, I don't know about the political climate they're going, but as far as going to hunt ducks, that would be pretty high on my list. Or some regions of Russia have unbelievable mallard populations. And I love ducks that you can call and then answer the call. That's why Argentina isn't super high on my list. But then there are places that I've already been to that doggone it. You know, it's like, man, if I could go back. And some of them I may not ever have the opportunity again. Others I will. I shot ducks one day off of a little bit.
Hey, let me stop you right here. Hey, let me stop you right there. I'm going to make it a two-part question for both of you.
Okay.
What's one place that you would hunt, bucket list, that you would – if you've been there, you can say that place, but what's one place that you would love to hunt for the first time or again in the United States?
Well, again, man, I've got, you know, I didn't think about that for a second. Jeff, why don't you answer that and then I'll chime in?
Probably Kansas. I would either want to go to Kansas or go to Oklahoma and hunt peanut fields. That's been one thing that I've always, because I went out to Oklahoma on a turkey hunt several years ago, and he offered some duck hunts, but it was in little creek bottoms and stuff like that. But peanut fields in Oklahoma or hunting in Kansas, I honestly think Kansas is probably the best waterfowl. For any kind of waterfowl you would want in the U.S., Kansas, it would be my number one pick. Now, it's not a lot to look at, not a whole lot of scenery, but for top waterfowling, you could pick one destination to do it all. That would be it.
You know, I think that's a good answer, and I've hunted both of them. Oklahoma would definitely be one of those places. So your first question, Rocky, you know, any place you haven't been, some place maybe in Pakistan, some place like that, or Russia. And what I started to say, you know, when you interjected and gave us part two, there are several places that I've been that I would love to go back to. Oklahoma is definitely one of them. Canada geese can kill 8 per person per day. My buddy Brad Allback of Allback Adventures has taken me on some hunts that were just unbelievable. So Oklahoma, I can remember I hunted one on the Little Bighorn River about 20 miles from the battlefield that Custer made famous, in a canyon in the snow in December with mallards and wigeon just right in your face dropping down into this canyon, into this moving water to eat Russian olives. It was amazing, and it's something I'd love to do again in Montana. And, of course, Rocky, you've been with me to South Dakota. Got to, of course, be drawn to get your waterfowling license. South Dakota, if you're a non-resident, South Dakota, and you've been with me also to Great Salt Lake and Utah, unbelievable hunting. So, you know, I can't narrow it down to just one. I mean, Oklahoma, Montana, and then, you know, I'm right here driving along the Mississippi River in Tennessee when, you know, the water's right out on the islands in the Mississippi River, in the Willows. Mallard's as good as it can get anywhere in the world. I can't imagine it being any better. So for me, that's tough, man. I can't just narrow it to one. How about you, Rocky? Let's hear your answer.
I think if I had my choice of one place to go that I have not been, it's when we were out in Utah, we talked to a bunch of guys that were hunting on the Snake River, I believe it was.
Yep.
And they were, yeah, in Idaho, in the southern part of Idaho. And they were talking about killing these mallards in these warm water spring. I guess the warm water is where they dump into the Snake River, but all these Russian olives and these mallards are just piled on top of each other. And I think I'd like to try that one time. You know, I got to fulfill my dream of doing a dry field hunt with you, Jay Paul, a few years back. And then also we hunted with mountains surrounding us on the Green River and then on the Great Salt Lake. So I fulfilled those two dreams. So I guess the only thing, I would love to shoot some ducks on the Snake River just from listening to those guys talk about it. And then maybe the Platte River, like Jake was talking about in the previous podcast.
All right, brother. With everybody listening right now, I'm fixing to commit to something. This season, thanks to our friends at Excel Boats and Mud Buddy Motors. By the way, this final segment has been brought to you by Excel Boats and Mud Buddy Motors. That Excel F4 equipped with a Mud Buddy motor can get you to where the ducks are, and more importantly, it can get you back home again. And so now, Rocky, you didn't know this, but I'm fixing to go on record right now. You and I are going back this year to Utah, and we're going to go to southern Idaho, and I am fixing to put you on that hunt on some warm water springs right there off of the Snake River. So if that's your bucket list place, me and the guys at Excel and Mud Buddy, we're fixing to make that happen this year. And Jeff, if you want to buy a plane ticket, since you're here with us today, you're invited to come along too, buddy.
I'll have to drive because I'm just not getting in a plane. I would like to revert back something that Rocky said earlier, talking about dove hunting in October and listening to the radio in the afternoon. In October, Ole Miss is going to be playing all the 11:30 games by then. So by the time you hit that dove field, Ole Miss's game is already going to be over with.
That's right. We're going
to
have
you'll be listening to Mississippi
title.
State.
We listen to college football. Jeff, you probably didn't know it, but I'm an alumni of Ole Miss, too.
My condolences.
On here.
My condolences.
Maybe I need to withdraw that invitation, Rocky, but no. I don't care. Hey, I'm a State fan, too. Listen, I'm an SEC.
Wow. All I can say is wow. Thank you, Jay Paul. I don't even know what to say.
Listen, hey, if Mississippi State is playing somebody outside of the SEC, you can bet that I'm going to be rooting for that SEC team. I'm sorry. I will even root for the Florida Gators if they're playing somebody, or the Arkansas Razorbacks if they're playing outside of the SEC. But that's the only way.
We lost Jeff. All right,
I'm back. We had some technical difficulties.
Man, I tell you, if Mississippi State or even the University of Arkansas, as bad as I hate the Hogs, they're playing a non-SEC team, I'm going to root for them. And I'm sorry, Rocky. So, yes, sometimes I am a Mississippi State fan, as bad as I hate to admit it. And that's probably a good spot right there for us to close this thing out to, because, gosh, that even hurt the state. But Jeff, I know you loved hearing that too, by the way. Guys,
we don't need Jeff to get another word in. Go ahead and close it.
Hold up here.
Hey, hang on, Jeff. You don't know this, but the format of our show is everybody gets a final word. So just hang on, because I have a feeling yours is about to come.
Well,
listen, I appreciate everybody.
Not, Actually, it's not. I have a final word on something else. I'm gonna be good. I'm not gonna do it. I'll save that for later.
Well, if you feel like you really need to let it fly, you can let it go. Right.
No, it's something else. That's something that Rocky and I discussed the other day, I think. But yeah, I got something else in mind.
All right, so now we got to have you back on here as a guest again, Greenhead 22. There you go, brother.
Yeah.
Well, man, listen, it's time we closed it out here. And like I said, everybody gets a final word. So had a great podcast. We want to thank you, Jeff, for stepping in there and being our guest. Rocky, I'm going to turn it over to you. Final thoughts, final question for Jeff.
Jeff, I appreciate you coming on. You and I have been friends for a long time now. We were two of the original members on Duck South when it first started way back in 1998 or end of fall of 98, spring of 99, whenever it was. But thank you for coming on, because I know that the guys at Duck South love to hear this, having you on here.
Oh, yeah.
One little announcement that I was going to make and leave this in the final thoughts. Once fall gets here in the next few weeks, Jeff and I are going to do a once a month after hours Duck South on the X podcast, and we're going to do it with members from the site. So everybody get ready. Jeff is going to be calling on you.
We're going to call it the roast shoot.
Wow, that's a new one even on me. That's pretty doggone cool. All right, Jeff, Greenhead 22, roast shooter. That's a good handle for you from now on, roast shooter.
I know.
All right, final thoughts. What's your last word, Jeff?
It's about opening day of dove season. Guys that are hunting your dogs that have been laid up in the pen since the last day of duck season, please don't burn your dogs and beat them, because it's not their fault. I see it every year. My dog has not picked up a bird since March during conservation goose season. I know he's going to break on the first bird. He's HRCH. He's 9 years old. He knows how to do it, but he's going to be rushed, and I've forgiven him on that. But I see it, and I hear about too many people just destroying their dog on opening day of dove season. And I don't know what's wrong with this dog. It did this, this, and this, and this. Man, it's been 8 months or 9 months. It's that dog cannot lay up in a pen, and he's running like a Ferrari during duck season because he's gotten in his groove. Well, then you bring him out for dove season, and you're working with a pinto. I mean, you cannot expect – nobody can honestly expect their dog to be at the level during dove season when you haven't worked them. And another thing, don't wait till this week to get your dog out and start working him, because it's not – you should have done that last month if you're going to do it. Because there are some hunters that need some collar conditioning Monday. They need to collar on them.
Amen. Man, that is great. And if you've been listening regularly to the podcast twice before, Jeff, I've commented on the exact same thing. You know, so you guys that are regular listeners, obviously it's pretty doggone important. And I would even go so far as to say this. If your dog hadn't really been out of the pen since last duck season, this weekend's not the time to get him out. No way.
No.
You know, I don't have Houston with us right here, right now, so I need to move on into my final question, and it's for you, Jeff. We always ask our guests the first time that they're on with us. When you're out there, duck hunting, for the fat boy, Houston, what's your favorite snack that we're going to find in your blind bag?
My favorite snack is probably, it'll be a toss-up between the Snickers, a Snickers almond bar, or a honey bun. I started eating honey buns like pretty religiously, and my dog started staring me down pretty good, pretty hard. And I texted one of our club members, and I said, "Why is my dog just staring me down only when I eat a honey bun?" And come to find out, he'd been slipping him honey buns in the blind when I had my back turned. So, any other food? I don't know how. I mean, we don't give dogs a lot of credit. They're smarter than we think they are, and sometimes they're smarter than their own good. I mean, mine's like that. Heck, my dog is actually out of Maxis, which I think was one of your old dogs, Maxis Murphy.
Yep, sure was. Sure was. Yep. Yeah, Murphy was a SRS champion in 2006 in Stuttgart, Arkansas. And absolutely awesome dog, stand at the line within competition and hunt over. That's really cool, Jeff. I didn't know you had one of his progeny, but I like you even better now. So I'm going to close this out, and I'm going to stick with that dog theme because you are exactly right about that. And you brought up something else, you know, your buddy sneaking your dog's honey bun. I'm going to go the opposite of that, give you a tip here. I tell people during duck season when it's really, really super cold, don't ever take your dog into the field on an empty stomach. You know, let it fuel up. Hey, you eat a hot breakfast, let your dog do the same. But if you've just got to take your dog out into the field this weekend, if you can't help yourself, then don't feed that dog in the morning before you go out. One of the most common occurrences in the heat is gastric torsion. A lot of people refer to it as the dog having its stomach flip. It can be fatal. Do offer your dog plenty of water. Make sure that your dog's got plenty of water. Make sure that your dog has some cool place to retreat to, and make sure that you've got a way to cool that dog down if you see a dog starting to get hot. I've talked about it a couple times before on the podcast, but I'm going to close this out today reminding you the two biggest signs of overheating is that the dog becomes confused, acts dazed, lethargic, maybe staggers around. And number two, the dog is not panting. It's instead trying to inhale really, really deep breaths, and it's struggling for oxygen. If you see the warning signs that your dog is starting to overheat, the key to keeping that dog alive is cooling him down as efficiently as possible. So make sure that you've got a bag of ice on hand, a way that you can keep that dog cool if you do just have to hunt your dog this weekend. And I really appreciate you alluding to that, Jeff, being a dog man. Well, that wraps it up for us today, folks. Really hope you've enjoyed this edition of the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com and brought to you by Bear Animal Health, makers of Advantage Multi. Advantage Multi is the only heartworm preventative proven to be 100% effective against all strains of heartworms. And by the way, a lot of people don't know it. Rocky didn't mention it earlier, but we're really excited about the fact that as of last Friday, the Bear Advantage Multi On the X podcast powered by DuckSouth.com is now available in the iTunes app. So if you've got an iPhone, all you've got to do is go into iTunes, search On the X podcast. You don't have to scroll down far. We're already moving up toward the top of the page, and you can subscribe right there and get every single edition of the On the X podcast powered by DuckSouth.com. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great day.